welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Glover.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're talking about Undertale.
By Toby Fox.
A game that's kind of been blowing up as of late.
This is one of the most popular or highest reviewed games on Steam.
Yeah.
Has one of the highest Metacritic scores that there is.
And Gary didn't like it.
We're gonna get into it. But let's spend, like, I was thinking about it because we can't. Some of the great things it does are gonna be in the spoiler section for sure. One thing is that, like, I've been real public about not liking this game. I think everybody should play it. It's really interesting, even though I don't like it. But the like, just to balance that, because I don't want to be confused as to why I don't like it. Let's spend, like, 7 to 10 minutes just talking about good stuff about it that, like, okay. I really love, because there's a lot that I like. It's not, I don't want that to get lost in my frustration.
I think it's also hard because a lot of the more likable stuff is in the spoiler section
for sure, but there's plenty of things that are kind of general that we can talk about that are great.
Sure. So let me go into the deets real quick. So as we said, the game is made by Toby Fox. It was kickstarted. It's currently available on Windows and OS X. It's my understanding he's trying to get it on Nintendo platforms and Linux soon, and it was released on 15th of September 2015.
It actually won't show up on Nintendo stuff soon because it's done with Game Maker Studio.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he can't get it on Nintendo. He'd have to reprogram it, but he'd like to.
He'd like to.
Toby Fox is an interesting dude. He made a bunch of mods for Earthbound.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of how he got his fame, and that comes through in this. And then he was a musician and did music for, like, Homestuck and things like that. He's a musician, and then these Earthbound mods, and that kind of comes through, and it's almost entirely the work of one dude. Like, there are a lot of people, there are other people on his team, and he wouldn't necessarily say that, but he did a lot of the stuff.
Yes,
like, he did the music, he did the most of the art, he did a lot of the programming and stuff, and it's kind of his baby.
Yeah.
It's an auteur thing.
You said that he made music for Homestuck and he did Earthbound mods. That is the clearest indication of how this game plays entirely. Like, think of those two things mashed up in a game inspired by those, with a lot of kind of fourth wall stuff and cool characters, and that's what you get. Like, that's what Undertale is.
Yeah, it's a real mishmash of a couple different things, and we should kind of go through them maybe a little bit and say, like, what they do. So, like, the big thing, the big selling point for Undertale is that it's hardly a JRPG, but it's kind of a JRPG. It uses the trappings of a JRPG, but it wants to subvert tropes of JRPGs.
Yes.
So, like, it wants to, the big back of the box thing is, it's like the JRPG where you don't have to kill anybody.
Yep.
You know, there's a peaceful way to handle this. That's been, you know, there are elements of that. He talks about it in interviews. He talks about how he's really influenced by the Shin Megami Tensei games, because you can do that too. You can recruit these demons by talking to them. But it's possible to go through the game without killing anybody, and ends up being really important to kind of the grander cosmology. The other kind of thing that I feel like kind of comes through is that it's really unpredictable, and, like, kind of moves from thing to thing really quickly.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of, like, little puzzles and things like that that don't, it never really kind of settles into one game type, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the primary gameplay is, you know, your Earthbound-esque fighting when you encounter some monster who's, you know, against you. You're going to get a very Earthbound-style fight screen. Mm-hmm. However, if you are trying to go pacifist, there's sort of a puzzle to trying to talk to the character based on sort of their responses to certain actions, help you give you clues as to what the character wants you to do in order to pacify them and then befriend them. And all the while, they're monsters, they're trying to attack you, and so you get this bullet hell-esque little box you can move this heart around, and there's bullets coming at you, and you're trying to dodge them to mitigate damage.
Yes, and this is one of the things, like, that ultimately ended up being the reason why I didn't finish the game, but one of the things I like about it is that this bullet hell thing is never static. Mm-hmm. It always reflects the encounter that you're in, and I really love that. Like, I like the way that, you know, depending on the monster, it's going to have different kinds of objects, or the shape of the arena you're dodging in will change, or, you know, it's always related to what you're fighting. There's no kind of out of the box, you know, bullet hell segment to go through, because that's like the thing that happens with, because we didn't talk about attacking, because like everything, and it's hard just to talk about positive things because all these tie into things that I kind of don't like to, but everything about the game is telling you not to hurt people.
Yes.
Like it's not an Easter egg to get through the game as a pacifist.
No.
Like that's what it's everything about it. Like the fact that these things are so charming and cute and that they like you, and you know, it wants you not to hurt people. We should talk about the attacking, which is a timed button press thing. And the thing about JRPGs in the past when they have time button press system or something like that, like it's better than nothing, but it's always the same, like every time, and that's not that cool. And this could have turned into that if literally you just had your like 4-inch by 4-inch box with some bullets that would come in, you know, and every time you dodged, it would still be better than nothing, but it wouldn't be very interesting. And I think that the actual doing something instead of just, you know, tap a JRPG nonsense, like, is interesting. And I like the way that it's always different. Like, that's really, really cool in a way that plays into the character, because these are all characters, because you're supposed to like them, because you're supposed to not want to kill them.
Right. Yeah. The actual damaging of other players is pretty simplistic. It is, like you said, time button press, but it isn't even to the level of like the Mario RPG or Paper Mario series. It's still like, it's just hit the thing when it's in the middle of the attack bar.
Other thing.
Yeah. It's very simple. Still not Final Fantasy. I choose a menu item simple, but, regardless, like he didn't expand on that nearly as much as he did the elements that lead to you,
pacifism stuff. Cause that's what the game's, you know, leaning into. It's kind of like, I mean, it's not a false choice, but it's kind of a you know, it's not as much of a choice as maybe it makes it out to be.
No, when, and
yeah,
the you know, genocide route where you actually kill everyone and try and go the exact opposite of where the game's obviously, you know, emphasizing
pushing
you
towards
to go,
yeah,
that actually is very punishing. Like it's very obvious that, you know, he built this world without you wanting making that a target you don't want to go for, and putting a lot of hurdles in your way.
And that's something that I end up having like a lot of problems with when I think about how difficulty fits into this thematically.
Mm-hmm.
Because the argument that I've read is that people say like it's harder to not kill people in this game. We didn't talk about this part, but when you kill people, you get experience, mm-hmm. and that makes you tougher. And like it does in all video games. If you don't, you just get money. So you get through the whole game at level one if you go through the pacifist route. So it's theoretically a little bit easier to kill people. And so I've heard it argued like, oh, it's harder to do the right thing. You know, that's the reason why it's harder not to kill people. But it ends up being hardest to kill everyone. Like, it ends up, like, I don't understand what that message is supposed to be. If the idea is that it's hard to do the right thing, well, it's like, okay, it's hard to do the right thing, but it's hardest to kill everyone. Like, is just the idea that the easiest thing is to kill some people and not kill other people? Like, that's a weird message.
Yeah.
If that's the idea. So I think it's muddled. Like, I don't think that's the idea behind it.
That's definitely muddled. Yeah.
I don't know why or what kind of thematic or literal significance there is to the difficulty differences in the two things. Like, if with the genocide route being a thing. Like that kind of, when I found out that was as punishing as it was, I was like, oh, like it should be a breeze. You know, if that was the idea, if it was just kind of like, oh, these things that want to kill you, it's harder to do the hard thing and the responsible thing, then the genocide route should be like just a dumb power fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, and they should make you feel bad, but it shouldn't be mechanically hard. And like, that's the thing. I'm already segueing into things I don't like.
It's okay.
The sparing people thing presents itself as I read a review that said this. So this is, and it's just one of those things where you read somebody else's words and they articulate what you're feeling.
Yeah.
The sparing people thing is not, it's presented as a moral choice, but it's actually a mechanical choice.
Yeah.
Like it's presented as like, you know, in other video games, like when you have your Mass Effects or your Fallouts or something like that, which I'm not saying do morality better, but it's just an option on a thing and you're playing a role. In this, like there are things that muddle up that playing a role, to where like for somebody like me and, you know, for a couple reasons, some my fault and some not, like I found the pacifism stuff really difficult. It didn't matter what I chose. Like I wasn't able to physically be the person that I wanted to be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of things like that, that on like, if you, when you say it like that, it almost sounds like a cool intentional thing, but they all conflict with each other.
Yeah. There are only truly sort of three different endings. One of which, like the neutral ending, if you want the true pacifist ending, you basically have to get the neutral ending first and then go back and kind of clean up your play a little bit, and then you get the true pacifist ending. And getting the neutral ending, you can just swap back and forth between, you know, just befriending everyone and attacking those who make things difficult for you, and you'll still get to the end of the game. But to get either of the other two, it is a huge, daunting task in order to successfully live through a couple of the last fights when you want to go pacifist, and to successfully defeat especially one of the guys when you're trying to go true genocide.
And people keep saying, like, oh, you're not supposed to do pacifist run on the first playthrough. And, like, I'll admit that it was, you know, spoiled for me, but it says it on the back of the box. Like, hey, this is the selling point of the game. Like, you don't have to kill people. And then they present just this series of nice people, you know, who are cute and stuff and doing these things that I like. You know, so it, I don't buy that you're supposed to get the neutral ending first. Like, you have to at the very end, but I don't get that, like, oh, you're supposed to just kill people until you're strong enough to play the game right.
Yeah, no, I don't buy that either.
I don't buy that. Like, and that's the, you know, it's this game has a really fervent fan base that are very defensive. Like, nobody's been mean to me about not liking this game, but it just, people will kind of go through a lot of hoops just to be like, no, it's great. And I wouldn't interfere with their experience, but people don't seem like super willing to recognize that there are some, like, possibly issues with it. Like, I've never seen a game gain a cult of personality this quick.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much fan art and so much, like, kind of, and I don't hold that against the game, but just to say that the people who love this game are really dedicated to it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would say that I love the shit out of this game, but I'm perfectly willing to recognize the failings of it. Like, and we'll get into it, but where you were having the most trouble was absolutely trouble for me. And, like, it wasn't quite enough to drive me to quit, but it definitely was problematic.
And I just don't see what purpose it serves.
No,
right?
Yeah,
like the bosses that, you know, the numbers are just too high for a game that's focusing on its narrative. Like, there's a boss where there are other issues with it too. Like, so when we're talking about the passive route or the pacifist route, the idea is when you're fighting these random encounters, they're kind of like puzzles. A puzzle is something where you have all the information and it's up to you to put it together. And that's what, I don't think these are puzzles. Like, they're like trial and error, sections. Like, you go to somebody, you can always check them out, but then you have like a talk and a pet and a flex or something like that, like these silly options. And I appreciate that you have silly options. And sometimes you can kind of guess based on what the character looks like, what you might want to do, but a lot of times you can't. And then you just kind of guess one and then try to go through, you know, try to figure it out. You just kind of do trial and error. And so it's not really a puzzle. It's just kind of picking options until one of them, you know, is a trail. And every time you do that, you're doing a bullet hell section.
Right.
So it just kind of became wearing on me that I couldn't just, you know, figure out these charming characters without going through this mechanical thing. Mm-hmm. And then there are fights where there's no feedback. Like, there's fights where you have to do the same thing over and over, and the option or the response you get doesn't change.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
yeah,
first boss fight in the game.
Very first, yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible. Like, that's really bad. Like, you know, I think that's really frustrating. And people say, like, oh, you're supposed to fail that. But don't, you know, I don't know. Like, don't do that to me.
Yeah.
Like, don't, you know. And then the boss fight, the spider lady boss fight, the Muffet boss fight, you just have to, nothing you do matters. You just have to decide to last for 17 turns.
Yep.
So you have to go through 17 of these bullet hell sections, which is a lot. That's a big number, you know?
Yeah.
And then people, oh, there's these Easter eggs that you can do to get past it, but there's no feedback for the Easter eggs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the Easter eggs all involve keeping an item from the beginning of the game. And it's like, dog, I'm having a hard time with this and I only have 8 inventory slots.
Yep.
Like, I'm not going to keep that. You know, I just don't know, you know, or they're like, oh, there's this super armor you can get in this hidden place. And it's like the things that allow you to make the experience a little bit easier shouldn't be that esoteric or that hidden, you know, and be that like the feedback in the boss fights or these kind of, you know, difficulty selectors that are built into the game.
Right.
You know, that just ended up being a huge bummer for me. But I did say I was going to talk about nice things for the first part of it. Let's talk about how good the soundtrack is for a second.
Soundtrack
because it's really phenomenal. Like, yeah, it's really, really good. Like, I don't think I like the games that Toby Fox makes, but I like the songs he makes. Like, I think he's a great musician. Like, super, super good.
Yeah. The music's really good. You know, the art, for what it is an interesting art style that is, like, you know, pretty much all his own. It hones into a little bit more of the original Mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of an NES, but with these big graphics that are low color, low palette.
We'll talk about that a little, something about that in the spoiler section I want to hit on. But yeah. Remember this.
Sure.
You know, yeah, because they remember that what we're talking about, the art style.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I thought it was pretty good. And there's a lot of diversity in there, at least. And the characters that you're meant to, you know, be involved with are very expressive. They have a lot of different sprites.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters themselves, like the dialogue, the writing in this, you know, even if it all doesn't entirely fit what he's going for, like, there's a lot of pretty good funny bits, and the characters have a fair bit of depth to them. Like, mm-hmm. It's enjoyable to be in dialogue and kind of go through all the different options that these characters have, especially, like, the dating sections are pretty comical.
Yeah, and, all the NPCs are pretty great.
Yeah.
Like, I like them all. And that was, like, the thing where people are like, I can't believe you didn't like this game. You're like, there's a whole long section about dating a skeleton. I'm like, no, I thought that was pretty great. Like, yeah, I thought it was charming and great. You know, it was funny. One of the things about the humor in this game, and this is going to sound like a damning thing, but it's not, is that I was surprised by how, like, of a very specific zeitgeist it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is very, to me, like, modern Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, no, like, people,
I don't,
like,
disagree at all, yeah.
Cool people on Twitter that I follow, like, cool, and specifically, like, progressive indie games people who are on Twitter, like, these are the aesthetics they like.
Yeah.
Like, jokes about making out with a ghost. Like, those are the kinds of things I see from, like, social justice Twitter a lot of the time. It's very, like, of a specific aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is made for the people who, you know, who are defending of these, like, off-kilter weird games but have affection for Earthbound. You know, like, the same people who really love Her Story or Gone Home or something.
Mm.
It's their sense of humor in a really, and that's largely my sense of humor too. Like, it's not a damning thing. It just, I've never seen that audience catered to like this.
Right.
And that's really interesting to see because, you know, it seems unmistakable to me.
Yeah. No,
like the skeleton date, you know, the skeleton thing and the ghost thing and all that stuff, like, really feels like that's what it is.
It is definitely of a modern internet humor.
Mm-hmm.
And way better than Jazz Punk was. Jazz Punk's a different kilter, but it's also
different
modern
kind of
internet,
like,
humor.
Yeah, that was wacky, random, like, internet humor.
Yeah.
That was a game for, like, you know, a PewDiePie to play. And and I, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, your PewDiePie are going to play this game as well, but it's not exclusively to those guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's not nearly as wacky. It's, like, it's not subtle either. It's hard to explain. It's about skeletons and ghosts and monsters having crushes on each other, which is, like, a really specific, like, cutie culture. Like, it's like that, you know, like the cuties killing video game shirt kind of thing. Like, it's that, the game, you know, which is cool. Like, I consider myself to be at least part of that. So
yeah.
It's not damning. It's just weird to see it.
I mean, that's the sort of thing you can get out of someone who's, you know, a guy who made music for Homestuck and loves Earthbound and is of the modern internet, makes a game himself.
Mm.
You know, he can cater to an audience like that. And, you know, I think it ended up pretty well, so.
Yeah.
So, you know, aside from your point of views on how the gameplay played out, I was a pretty big fan of the dodging bullet hell system and liked it quite a bit. And if it wasn't kind of tied to this moral choice, like, I actually think that if you're only playing for the pacifist route, and don't assume that there's any other way to play, then the difficulty ramp itself was pretty good, aside from a couple stops where it's unintuitive. The, you know, Toriel's fight at the beginning and the last couple fights where you don't have any insight as to what you should be doing and for how long.
Mm-hmm.
That I can
or
do
you
without.
Have insight as to how long, but how long is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
like, that's the you know, the I died on this, like, Mecha Bowie fight,
right?
And it was just too much. You know?
But yeah, I think that if there was more insight into that and you weren't, like, at a loss, I don't even mind it being 17 rounds for the Moffat fight, but I want to know that it's 17 rounds for the Moffat fight.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a countdown timer, like, she's going to give up at some point. You know, I'd like it to be built in well, but if I'm just there surviving for infinite amount of time, not knowing if I should be doing this or not. I had that problem with the very last fight, which you didn't get to, but those are confusing for me. Other than that, the difficulty ramp was really nice. If what I enjoy about the game is the bullet hell dodging, it was well executed in how it progresses and gets more difficult with more precision as the game progresses.
Yeah, I don't like, I'm not a big bullet hell guy, but right. What's interesting is that like the next episode we do is going to be on Afterbirth, and like a lot of people consider Isaac to be really hard and consider it to be a bullet hell game, and mm-hmm. like there are elements of bullet hell in Isaac, especially in later bosses, and I was trying to figure out why that works for me and this doesn't, like why that was that's easy and fun and this is hard and not fun for me. I was thinking about a couple things. Somebody on our Slack channel suggested this, and I think it's true, is that like in Isaac, you're controlling a character with kind of weight and momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really used to that. Whereas in Undertale, you're just controlling a cursor.
Yeah.
Like it just stops and moves and stuff. So it, in some ways it's very precise, but in another way, it's very unnatural because no other video game character has ever controlled like that.
Right.
Like ever, you know, I can't say no other, but like video game characters have momentum.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of kinesthetics. And this game has, you know, you're not controlling a character when you're doing that. So there are no kinesthetics.
Right. You're moving or you're not.
Yeah, it's just moving a cursor. And that was hard. And then the other thing I think that I like about Isaac is that like I don't show up at those bullet hell bosses with no means to defend myself other than dodging.
Right.
You know, like at the end of this game, because I was doing a pacifist run, the most number of hits I could take was 5.
Yeah.
You know, like
the progression is very, very slow.
That stays the same. You know, you don't progress.
Well, like you progress with items, so that you can take more hits by having better armor, but it's not much.
Yeah, it didn't make that big of a difference to me.
Right.
And again, you know, you can kind of get around that with healing stuff, but I can only carry 8 things. And again, everyone online is like, 8 things is so many. And I'm like, I every time you heal, like I'm getting, it's got that single party RPG thing. So like, if you get knocked down to 0 health before you actually do another action and start that timer on whatever you're doing again, you're taking 2 more bullet hells because you take the one for when you heal. So it's like 3 steps forward, 1 step back whenever I heal, because I'm probably going to get hit because I'm bad at the game. And I recognize like part of it is just being bad, but I'm not stupid and I'm not bad at games in general.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, and I didn't give up early. Like I've spent 6 hours on this. Like I spent a lot of time like trying to get better at the battle system. One thing I want to mention, and this is the only like unequivocal like damning thing about it, is that it's really shitty for colorblind people. Pale blue that like is the so we didn't mention this, but they started introducing different colored obstacles, and some of them you have to stay still through and some of them you have to move through. The one that you have to stay still through is a very pale blue that's very close to the white that you have. That's very hard to see. I was furious at a point because I'm like, oh, you just can't dodge this. Like, oh, since you can't dodge it, it's probably I'm supposed to die here. And then I died and got a game over and had to do another puzzle because they don't always put checkpoints right before bosses, which I hate anyway. But like I had to go through this. It was in the second area when I was heading to fight the first skeleton guy. And I just kept, I did this puzzle over and over and over, this like ice sliding puzzle.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was like, I can't dodge this. And then I looked online and they're like, oh, you know, you need to know how to stay still for these things. I'm like, stay still for them. And then looked it up. And so it's really aggressive to people who are colorblind.
That sucks, dude.
Which is probably a lot of my difficulty. To be honest. But I can't do anything about that. And it's 2015. Like you have colorblind mode. You don't just use color as a mechanic on its own in games anymore. Like you shouldn't do that, you know, because it just means like a tenth of your dude population or whatever the figure is. It's not quite that, but like a lot of your man population isn't going to be able to play your game.
Definitely.
You know? Right. So like, I don't know. It just ended up being really hard.
Completely understandable. Yeah. That's aggravating. I hadn't even thought of that. Like, didn't even think that pale blue like was something to consider in that. Like the same way that we were doing that Void Knight and I invited you over, you end up not being able to make it, but then we realized it was a game entirely about color.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have been able to play it for anything.
It's just the end of Chrono Cross for every boss fight.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I don't know how I got through that with patience as a kid, but now, you know, I no longer have that patience.
That's real unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think it's just that, like, because I would to just dodge the things
You made plenty of points about, you know, the...
Yeah,
the,
and the, I made a lot of progress. Like, if it was literally just impossible for me to play because of colorblindness, I wouldn't have gotten as far into the game as I did.
Yeah.
But it's just frustrating to me because there's, like, so much about it that I wanted to like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like having these likable characters. I like this idea. You know, music and aesthetics are fantastic. And the stuff we're going to talk about in the spoiler section, which I went and spoiled for myself online, is neat.
Yes.
Like, it does cool shit. like a lot of cool shit that I think is super subversive. I just don't find it fun to play at all. Like, it just, you know,
that.
Yeah, it's like, it would have been a cool, you know, it's a cool let's play for me. And again, it's cheap. I think everybody should play it. I wish this dude well. Like, it's really cool. They made this himself. It's really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I just didn't have very much fun playing it. Like, I don't know. I like it more than I like Lisa, because that's the other weird Earthbound inspired RPG we've done. And like Lisa, I thought, but weirdly, I thought the difficulty in Lisa made more sense.
Right.
Like, it's supposed to be a post-apocalyptic world where like everyone's killing each other for ketchup packets and shit.
That game is
like,
hard as fuck.
That should be hard. This, I was like, why, if the idea is this narrative, like this writing that, you know, you're proud of and you should be proud of because it's really good, then what is this doing here?
Yeah.
You know, like, what place does this have? And then everyone on the internet just says they don't find it difficult at all and I'm an idiot. So I don't know. But like,
I don't,
like,
think
there's
it's
no
that.
There's no accounting for fingers, right? Like, I just can't do it. You know, and I don't know how to explain that other than just my bad eyes.
Well, and it's absolutely, you're not wrong in that a lot of it's unintuitive, especially the fights you were in. Like, that's not at all like something that it can't be criticized for.
Like, yeah, the feedback saying, thing is a thing. Like,
yeah, anybody not saying otherwise, you know, anybody who's disagreeing with that is like, they're completely missing the point, because they played the game. They know there's, especially fucking that fight, the Toriel fight, and the last fight, like, it's unintuitive.
Yeah,
and you have to run yourself up against the wall until you figure it out, and that's not great game design. But there's a lot of other good shit going on around this game that make them love it. You can't just like blind yourself with the good parts.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where like the people who like this game tend to like it like 100% and just kind of shunt it into either like 100, like it's either a 10 out of 10 or a 0 out of 10. Like,
yeah,
there aren't places in between for it. Whereas like I keep thinking about like mixed bags of things, and people always say how like things turn into being kind of a gray. And like, that's not really true. I think things tend to just be like some good things and some bad things next to each other.
Yeah.
Like, they don't mix. They don't cancel each other out. You know, no matter how much I love Final Fantasy VI, it's still bad how many random encounters there are in that
game.
Of
course, yeah.
Like, that's bad about this game that is one of my favorite games of all time. That's a bad thing about it. It doesn't mean that that's still fine because of this other good thing. It means there's this great thing and this bad thing next to it. You have to go through both of them.
Yeah.
So like, I had to go through this thing that I thought was very bad to get to the good stuff. And the stuff that was bad was too bad for me to like it. There's the thing about the lack of feedback, you know, and the non-intuitiveness, like, it makes me think the developer for this, like, is real into his Easter eggs, right? Like,
yeah.
That's kind of his thing. And there was a point where, like, because I was going, like, I had to grind in this game. And one of his things was like, you never have to grind. And it's like, well, I need money because I'm out of fucking items. Like, I got to this boss fight and I don't have healing items and I'm bad at the game. So I was going back, like, the boatman on the River Styx to, like, go back to a town and buy stuff. And it takes so long for him to go. You had to watch this, like, cutesy animation to get there. And I just had this thought of, like, this game is really oftentimes asking me to wait so it can show me something cutesy kind of again and again. And like, that got frustrating to me too. Like, it's just like, there's this, like, he loves his, like, he wants to show you the cute thing. And like, I get it, you know, it's kind of, it's cute. Like, it works, but it doesn't work when I'm mad at the mechanical system.
Right.
Like, they don't talk to each other in a way that I find satisfying, or like support one another in a way that like makes up for each other. It's this bad thing next to this good thing. So they, you know, they color each other, but they don't cancel each other out. Like, I was so mad at that going back and forth on that death, you know, river thing, which was cute. Like, I admit that it was cute, but I was furious. So it wasn't cute. I was just like, let me go. Why didn't you put a shot before your boss fight? Like, why didn't you put a save point and a shot before your goddamn boss fight? Why wouldn't you do that? You know, Final Fantasy IV does that. Like, video games do that. Like, that should be a thing. No, I just had to watch this cute animation to get to the thing I want to do. So, just isn't it making me mad? but the spoiler stuff is almost all good.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't get to it, I think it's really great, and I wish I'd gotten to it.
So yeah, let's
move into
that. Yeah, we've got everything out. It's all out on the table.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go into a little bit of the intro to the story, and then we'll spoiler section, and we'll talk a little bit about characters, some of the cool stuff the game does.
Yep.
And tell you guys you should try and play it, check it out, see if you like those parts of it, and then you know, see if the systems don't disagree with you entirely. So the storyline starts off essentially that there was a race of monsters and humans that lived together for a long time, and then they started to war. The humans eventually won out, and they sealed the monsters underground. And ever since, the humans have lived above ground, monsters have lived underground. However, there's a point where it is weak on this mountain, and many children, including the player, the protagonist that you're playing, have fallen through into the underworld. And when you fall through into the underworld, you are greeted by this flower, who immediately, this monster flower that immediately starts attacking you, and you are saved by this motherly figure named Toriel, who then takes you into her home and teaches you the ways of peace. Mm-hmm. And that the game begins from there. So we're going to do a spoiler section here and talk a little bit more about storyline, cool stuff. But first, a little bit of admin stuff. So, mm-hmm. Gary, where can they find us outside of listening to the show?
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ what is it? Check It Out Comrade?
Yes, sir.
Yep. And then on Twitter at Comrade Podcast.
Yep.
You can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Mm-hmm. We're back on a regular schedule, so thanks for we didn't mention it at the top of the show, but we should have. So sorry about the hiatus. We've got a few more episodes, and they're all kind of big games.
Yes.
Up until the end of and then we're calling that kind of our end of season two.
Yeah.
Similar to how we did that last year. So we're gonna take a little break and then come back with a little roundup episode and then kind of come back.
Mainly I just need next time. Year. And I just need some time to play Fallout 4.
Yeah, I haven't even started it yet. what travesty of this is my life. I love Fallout. I have not gotten a chance to play it at all.
Yeah, so we have some big episodes coming up for you guys, and then we'll do a little recap episode at the end, similar to how we did last year. Just talk about mm-hmm. what we've played over the year. And then we'll be back in 2016. So
with new indie games. And so thanks for your grace with the hiatus. And if you like the show, rate and review it on iTunes and talk about it on Twitter.
Yep.
That's appreciated.
Always.
And so heading into the old spoiler zone.
All right.
Let's talk about spoilers for this game.
Yeah.
We're not gonna go beat by beat.
No, we can't go beat by beat. I mean we've spent a fair bit of time on this episode already, so
yeah.
But let's just talk about the characters in this game are really, really good, especially fucking Sans and Papyrus.
Yeah.
Like, they're two skeletons. They're really good characters. They're named after their fonts. Like,
I really like that they're named after their fonts.
Like, what's not to love there? So,
yeah. Those guys are great. Every antagonist you have, with the exception of, like, I think Undyne fell pretty flat for me. I didn't think there was a lot to her. But Metaton, which was the character I ended up like smashing my head against and quitting on,
mm-hmm.
Was still a really funny character.
Yeah.
And that's actually my favorite chapter in the game leading up to that boss fight, where it's this killer robot and the battles end up being
Romeo game show and Juliet things. Scene is really good.
Yeah, the opera, the fake opera scene from, again, name check, referencing Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
But like the cooking show, those things, like that section I think is endlessly imaginative and really funny. And the skeleton section is fun too. Like it's fun for skeleton lols, but it actually is legitimately like pretty funny. One of the things they do is that they squeeze a lot of jokes in this game, and that you can examine almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they put something kind of funny in almost every time you click on something. So it's very dense with writing, like with cute humorous writing. Like there aren't very many like laugh out loud moments, I think. But with charm.
Have you seen the lesser dog stuff?
I fought the lesser dog.
Okay.
What lesser dog stuff do you mean?
So the way to tame the lesser dog is to pet him.
Yeah.
What you may not notice is that when you pet him, his like neck, his head jumps up on his neck by like, 3 or 4 pixels.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just continuously pet him. And continuously make his head go up until it wraps around the entire screen, and the text changes every time. I seriously did it for like 20 minutes and kept getting new text. Shout out to Captain Invictus, who told me about this before I started the game, but he was like, you just keep petting you'll see how long he can take a joke. But if you get to if you find a lesser dog, like try petting him. And it is comical how long and how many different text boxes you'll get for the lesser dog like head wrapping the screen.
That's really funny.
It's really good.
Yeah, I didn't find that. I just tamed him when he was tameable. There's a lot of like cute dogs going on in this too, just going back to that like Twitter zeitgeist sense of humor.
The whole ice level is just full of dogs and they all like to be pet. Like all of them are tamed by petting of some sort or another.
Is it just me that like found that middle chapter like kind of flat? Like the Undyne chapter, like it's really unmemorable to me.
Undyne gets a little bit better after the neutral ending when you're trying to go back and do pacifist.
Yeah, like and there, you can go to her house and do
there's
stuff
a little date section with her, and she does get a little bit better. But yeah, I think that is a weak point in comparison. It's not nearly as good as the beginning's really solid, and getting to the lab and up into the core are really good. But yeah, the middle section does come a little bit flat.
We didn't really talk about it in the main episode, and probably should have, like the kind of just traditional puzzles that are in the game. I liked those a lot too. Like I was into that more than I was into, you know, the battle systems as a progress detriment, you know, a progress regressor, like progress implement impediment.
I especially liked how well it played into Papyrus's character at the start. Like that this is just how they trap humans is by putting puzzles in their way, and that he's so bad at it. That did play out really well. I don't think any of the puzzles were particularly like mind-boggling, or they're all simple kind of video game trope puzzles, I think, for the most part. The sliding ice puzzle for one is like, I mean, that's been in goddamn like three Final Fantasy games, but still, yeah, like as it was built into the characters and the storyline, I really really liked the puzzles.
Yeah, me too. And the ones like the Sokoban stuff during the fire section were really fun.
Oh yeah.
Where you have to like shoot the, you know, figure out the moving block puzzles with the block section. I like those a lot. Like I had a lot of fun with that. And I would, cause the you know, a JRPG like has random encounters to kind of handle pacing in a weird way. Like you can't just go from these story beat to story beat. Like you have to just have something in between,
right?
To slow you down. And I like that so much as like a slowing down mechanism. You know, we should talk about, so like you get through the game, you get to the end, you find this, this king, you find out more about this war, you know, a kid who, had previously, like, what is it? Like a kid had fell to the monster kingdom and a monster brought him back up and was murdered.
Yeah. I'll go into this a bit. Yeah. So you kind of get the storyline through, a couple different, like all of the endings essentially, but. What you are told throughout the whole game is that the king...
Asgore.
Yeah, thank you. Asgore the king wants you dead, and he has this guard to hunt humans, because if he gets 7 human souls, he can break the seal and return back to the surface. And he has 6, so you're the last one. What you learn through the pacifist ending is that they had Asgore and Toriel were the king and queen, and they had a son, and their son was they basically adopted the first human that fell through, and their son grew up with this human. They're very close friends, and those two decided to they could actually return to the surface because the human had died by poisoning themselves with too many flowers, and they essentially devised this plan where the son Asriel would absorb the human soul, return to the surface, get more human souls to break, come and then come back to the underworld and release everybody. That was kind of their plan. And it didn't work because he went up there with the corpse of his friend who wanted to see the flowers before they died. The humans thought that Asriel had killed this human and therefore started beating the shit out of him. And he came back to the underworld with his friend's corpse and, like, you know, just died as soon as he got back down there. And that's essentially the storyline. Turns out that in the other ending, the bad ending, the character that you name at the start isn't actually the name of the protagonist. The character you're naming is that first human who ever fell through. And when you go the genocide route, it seems like the plan actually wasn't what you thought. The plan was essentially that they wanted to go like kill a bunch of humans in order to break the seal and not kind of just go to where the humans were, get some more human souls and break the seal peacefully. This other human wanted to kill a bunch of humans and starts kind of invading your new human's mind and That's why you're such a genocidal asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole bunch of shit between there. In the pacifist route, you end up actually fighting Azrael, who turns out has been reincarnated as Flowey, the flower that attacks you at the beginning. And you get this ridiculous couple fights with him in both the neutral and the pacifist ending. The Photoshop Azrael, Flowey. This weirdest shit.
Those are the two things that I think are the cool, the strongest kind of weird subversive parts of the game,
especially with how it deal like breaks the fourth wall with game saves.
Well, that I was just going to bring that up. Yeah. So like one is the fact that it actually is playing with this graphical style that's been using the entire game. So mm-hmm. it lures you into the sense of comfort and then does something that is aggressively ugly. Like it looks like a Tim and Eric collage.
Yeah. It's like body horror when compared to the rest.
Like, well, body horror, like via Photoshop, like it's cheap looking, like it's a cheap looking monster that moves in a way that you don't see video game creatures move because it looks like a, you know, an Adult Swim animation.
Yeah. Or some flash thing, like mutation from the early 2000s.
Yeah. So like, that's really strong. Like when I saw that, I was just like, that's amazing. And then the way that the game treats saves is really interesting in general, because the saving is treated as this kind of superpower.
Yeah.
You know, there's like little hints of different characters who know that you can do this. And it's part of like, even, you know, when you do the I think it's in the genocide route where like Sans like starts saying like, hey, I think, you know, I know that nothing I can do matters because it ends up being the same whether you know, I succeed or fail, because he knows that you can reload. And like the whole thing with Flowey, where he like saves and reloads the game in the middle of the fight.
Yeah.
Or says things when you quit, you know, to try to save and things like that. Like, that's so cool. Like, I really, really like that. And I wish that more of it had been in the earlier part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, because that's really cool. It like, I really like that strong kind of fuckery. Like, that's really strong.
And it's unfortunate that that kind of sells the game really hard for like how creative it is. And it's all right at the end.
It's really end loaded.
Yeah.
Like the game is very like end loaded, and like it's charm and like cutesiness front loaded and mindfuckery fourth wall stuff backloaded.
Yep.
You know, and then just with like, I watched the last fights and I was just like, there's no way I could do that.
Yeah.
Like there's just not a way. Like I was, you know, I was talking about it on something awful. I'm in mid argument right now as we record, where like I was, you know, I was talking about Reagan Kelly, who's the guy from the Short Game podcast. So he was like, I died on that fight 23 times, and he was just fine with that. And I'm just like, fuck, dude, like 23 times, I can't die on a fight 23 times. Like,
yeah,
I don't. That is enough to make me think that there's something wrong, and I want to leave.
Right.
You know, like I didn't die 23 times on Fume Night. Like, it's just like, I don't, you know, that's like the hardest like Dark Souls boss ever. And it's like, that didn't take me 23 times, you know? Yeah. So it is, it's a shame that so much stuff that I like is just next to something I don't like, but the stuff that I like is so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like that end stuff is really, really cool.
The story stuff is also pretty cool. Lore stuff. I didn't do the best summary of it, but it does like kind of build this deep lore shit all right at the end too, about like who's who, what's involved and how, like, the king and queen's son is now a monstrous flower. Like, shit gets ridiculous.
Yeah, it was born without a soul. Like, it was created in a lab.
Yeah.
Without a soul. And there's this big reveal about what experience and levels.
Yeah, that part's great.
So, stand for, which is really cool.
Yeah. That's all love. Sans. Sans is really, like, right before the end is just, like, breaks everything down and makes all these mechanical, you know, things that we've come accustomed to in RPGs. Then you've seen on your charts the entire time, killing something earns you EXP and leveling up, those are all terms that are completely switched around to be horrendous, yeah, terrible, it's
execution
things.
Points and level of violence,
yeah,
is love, is how, you know, is the stuff that you get.
Yep.
Which is you know, pretty great. Like, that, you know, that's a cool inversion. Like, there's part of me that was eye-rolly early on where it's just like, oh, okay, humans are the monsters.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's okay, and it still kind of indulges in that a little bit. Like, it's more complicated than that, but there's a little bit of that to it. But then it just gets more complicated until like it becomes its own thing.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
yeah.
Like, it starts off like I was got a little eye rolly about that when it first started revealing kind of what the story was going to be, but then it just went further than I thought it would and redeemed itself for me.
Yeah, it's not, it starts off feeling like it's just, you know, humans are monsters thing, and then it becomes about specific characters and like,
exactly,
well, you know, fairly well developed characters throughout the storyline, and that it makes it about them and not this,
exactly,
general,
yeah it breaks out of like the, you know, just being tropes.
Yeah,
which is, you know, which is what it starts out as, and that totally works.
Yeah,
you know, totally, yeah, works. Like, it just, like, it's really, really cool. Like, that part is super cool. I really loved it. So the it is I'm really happy I watched like a let's play of it.
I never would have done the 5 hour Sans fight.
Not in a million years. Like I'm cool that I know what happens in it. The music is phenomenal.
Oh my god, song is so good.
But
oh my god,
boy, like is that not like a fun game thing to do?
No, I agree.
Like I like playing games. Like it's fun to do.
So yes. Long story short, we've talked about it for a long time here. This game is really cool with its storyline and characters. It has a lot of faults with gameplay and how those mesh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't disagree with that anyway. I had my own problems with it. As far as the actual gameplay goes, but there's so much like meat to how it handles these characters and this fourth wall breaking shit at the end that it makes it feel real good and kind of helped erase some of how bad that was. Before you started saying kind of going off on these things, I was like, oh yeah, that was a shitty fight. Like,
yeah,
it took me a second to come back to being in that seat and going, oh yeah, you're right.
It's frustrating. Shit. And like what, your tolerance for frustration is what is going to deter, the determination is a trope or is like a meme for this game. And I've seen so many people who non-ironically just cite it. Like, it's like, no, I was filled with determination. Like I was, and it's like, man, I just don't have that. Like not for these mechanics. Like I'm determined, like I will play a hard game and keep playing it until I beat it. Like that's what I do it semi-professionally. Like it is, but not with these mechanics.
And that sounds like such a, like neckbeardy, ridiculous way to answer. Like I'm having trouble with this. Oh, you need to be filled with determination.
Sun. Yeah, you need to praise the sun. You know, like yeah, that's what it does. It does come off like that a little bit. But I mean, I try not to judge anything by the worst of its fans. But that's like
true.
That is a thing. Like people are true believers in that kind of thing, and I don't get it. So not for me. I'll never pick this game up again.
Oh no! I've gotten everything there is to get out of it. I think, although I will make one quick mention of this. There does seem to apparently be some Argy type shit that people were working out.
There's more. He loves his secrets. Like there are still secrets in it.
He does love his secrets, and we didn't talk about like the Temmies or anything like that. But there is one character specifically that it looks like he was like cut out. But there's a lot of stuff about him, so much that it seems weird that he was cut and no one else was. And it's like he, I guess, from what we can tell, you can make him appear once in the game. And also, it seems like his storyline by digging through text and stuff was that he was the royal scientist before Alfie's, and he fell into the core and became part of this like consciousness of the world. And it's fucking weird. And he just appears sometimes. Like that's what was gonna happen, I guess, before it got cut. So maybe Toby's gonna further develop that at some point, or maybe it was like a cool idea that he couldn't quite flesh out. But it's neat that these people are able to dig through these resources and find all this like weird stuff hidden in this game. It's kind of shit you don't expect to find in a modern game. Like you expect it to be so clean of stuff like that. In old games, people dig up like hidden characters that were cut and shit all the time.
Yeah. I love cut content and stuff, but I wouldn't put it past it to be this intentional thing that's still unlockable in some way.
WD Gaster, who talked in Wingdings.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's cool. Like I dig it. It just
No.
Anywho, let's cut it there. Long episode of the show. Let's cut it out. Thanks everybody for listening. You can send your hate mail directly to me. You can bypass the contact thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to hear any shit about this. Like I've already heard enough about it and talked about it on Twitter, but like.
Don't fucking bug Gary about shit.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, I'm a nice guy. I just didn't like the same video game you guys liked.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to hear takes on those specific points, but you should know that I have already talked about and argued to death the idea that one, it's not actually hard, and I somehow tricked myself into thinking so. Or I'm lying. Two, that it's hard because it's supposed to make the choice meaningful, because I don't buy that because of the genocide ending. And so those two things I don't want to hear any arguments about anymore, because I've already talked about them a whole bunch.
Yeah, your good game is not perfect, guys. Stop fanboying.
Yeah,
it's good. It's a good game. Everybody, if you want to play it, check it
out.
It's good.
Unique. Like it's interesting, right? Yeah. Like it's worth. I'm glad this is being made. It should be checked out. It should be made. Like I'm glad it exists. It's not just good and with some flaws. It's actually like unique and maybe important. It's just I didn't have any fun playing it for reasons I feel like are, pretty valid. All right, well, I'm gonna go back to the internet now and argue about Undertale and Something Awful boards. Right. And then finish it off with some Twitter arguing about Undertale. Excellent. Maybe a quick nap, wake up with some arguing about Undertale on another forum.
Well, I'll go play our next game Afterbirth, and
yes,
you can have fun with your thing.
That sounds more fun to me, but
yeah,
anyway, good night, everybody.
See you, man.
All right.